Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and hey, Staten Island, you are up in your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. If you want to participate, just go to our website and answer this question. What's the biggest change in your Staten Island neighborhood over the last 10 years? We have a separate page for each county in our listening area. We invite your posts from wherever, but this week we're focusing especially on Staten Island, so we invite all our Staten Island listeners to go to the page and describe the biggest change in your neighborhood over the last 10 years. We will talk on the air about how Staten Island has changed on Tuesday's show right after the three-day weekend, so do this over the weekend or do it right now. Join us in creating your anecdotal census. A people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Now, last summer, the city approved 321 applications for street fairs. If you went to any of them consecutively, you may have felt like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day, or at the very least had a deep sense of déjà vu. It seems that every street fair, regardless of what street it's on, has the same gyro and souvlaki and funnel cake stands, the same sunglasses and tube sock vendors. But a new report from the Center for an Urban Future features suggestions from open space experts, food critics, and other urbanists on how to make these street fairs more dynamic and less repetitive. So joining me to talk about some of those suggestions are Jonathan Bowles, director of the Center for an Urban Future. Jonathan, welcome back.
Hello.
And with him, two of the contributors to the report, Suketu Mehta, a New York-based journalist and author of books including Maximum City, Bombay Lost and Found. Hi, Suketu. Welcome back.
Thanks, Brian.
And Stacy Sutton, Assistant Professor of Urban Planning at Columbia University's Graduate School of Architecture, Planning, and Preservation. Stacy Sutton, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you.
And listeners, we'll take your calls on this, your suggestions about what kinds of makeovers street fairs in New York need. Reimagine the New York City street fairs. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. What kind of food might be out there that isn't out there now? What kind of merchandise? Should the street fairs be themed? Should they be done away with altogether? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 if you want to join us in reimagining the New York City street fair, or post it online to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Jonathan, this is a follow-up to a report you did 4 years ago on street fairs. Remind us, what did you find out then about how these street fairs are actually run that make them so samey?
Well, back then there were actually more street fairs than now. There were about 370 street fairs, and we found that three production companies organized more than 200 of them. So that was really a recipe for blandness. It was a recipe for all the street fairs being the same, and these companies have very little incentive to go out and diversify the mix of vendors, the entrepreneurs and artisans. In fact, it's a lot easier for them to sign up a handful of vendors to be at the same fairs week after week than it is to do the extra work and look for, you know, the diamonds in the rough that really are out there in New York. But that takes work, and it's a lot easier, and it's, I guess, more profitable to get, you know, the same tube sock vendor week in and week out. And the result is we've seen that, you know, nine food vendors had something like half of all of the contracts to operate food stands at street vendors, street fairs in the city. And a lot of the vendors weren't even located in New York City. So we should be doing a lot better, and I think the process is really what's wrong.
So, Stacy, I know you looked at the economics and some of the politics of this. Who benefits? I guess it's just this handful of vendors from a system, you know, that everybody seems to hate the outcome of, because everybody sniffs at these street fairs, and yet they go on in the same fashion.
Yes, indeed. I actually think it's a handful of vendors, but I think they benefit as well as the production companies and a number of the not-for-profits. I mean, the profit that is made by selling the booths is distributed between the production company and the not-for-profit that put it together. And I think those are important revenues for the community. Mm-hmm. However, they're not because people aren't patronizing them at a level in which, you know, they would like to. They're actually losing a significant amount of revenue. You know,
what not-for-profits? That's a kind of a new wrinkle to a lot of folks.
It depends. And I think the production company is usually, I mean, so they have to be vetted. You know, these street fairs are vetted through the community boards, and it's not always the community board that's organizing it, but rather, you know, it could be a not-for-profit as large as Columbia University or as small as a community organization, a community development corporation or a business association, you know, kind of a well-regarded organization in a community that decides they want to put this together, and they work often along with the community board. And as I understand, the organization that kind of promotes it and takes responsibility for it, then hires, gets to choose which vendor, which production company to work with, and of which there are very few. And as Jonathan said, I think there are about three or four that are kind of dominant, and they then take on the responsibility of getting the vendors, securing the vendors, and you know, security and cleanup, and you know, all of the other kind of more mundane components. But in terms of the organization, it's a local organization, mm-hmm. typically.
So there's some positive outcome, at least to some degree. And Suketu Mehta, you suggested for the Center for an Urban Future Report making these fairs more ethnically diverse and tying them more to the communities that they're in. Do you think that can be done and still benefit the not-for-profits, which seem to have these easy contracts with the standard producers?
I think so, Brian. Perhaps we need to look at changing these easy contracts. Mm-hmm. The thing about these street fairs is that all of New York City is a street fair. So in order to cordon off a block and restrict traffic and get all the extra cops, you need to have a really good reason. And the street fairs in their current incarnation are not a really good reason. This is the most diverse city in the United States. And nowhere do we see this diversity represented in the food or the merchandise at these street fairs. Basically, your choice is what color you get your tube socks in. I can see festivals in Jackson Heights which are much better tied to the local community. In fact, I can see a festival of Jackson Heights on the Upper West Side. I mean, the idea of a street fair is to get people, New Yorkers, out on the street and to get them to meet each other. We live in a series of bubbles in this city, so we don't really have much of an idea about the lives of our Tibetan nannies, and the Tibetan nannies don't have an idea about the lives of the French chefs who live in Soho. So these street fairs are an ideal way of getting people out into all these dazzling neighborhoods of the city and to just to be able to go and sample the food and the people and the way of life without shelling out a lot of money.
I love that idea of a Jackson Heights street festival or a festival of Jackson Heights on the Upper West Side as an example of that. Now, here's somebody who I think is trying to reinvent the street fair. Paula Federson is calling in, president of the Jane Street Block Association in the Village. Paula, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
And what are you doing down there?
Well, I've been president of the Jane Street Block Association for a number of years and affiliated much longer. And for the last 12 years, we've done a street sale, which for our neighborhood is what we've, and our budget, we've felt was a good event. It is not at all commercial. We have no ties to any commercial company. And it's one block, one day. It's limited to the neighbors. First Jane Street, second West 12th and Horatio, and on expanding for space. People bring their closet outings, shall we say, and sell them.
Is it a street fair or is it just a garage sale?
Well, I don't know the difference. We call it both. We do not have food because it's much more costly and mm-hmm. Requires a lot more permitting. We encourage the local vendors on the street to do the selling and gain the benefit uh-huh. from that. It's a very low-key thing. It's one of the most popular events in the village, evidently, uh-huh. We're told. And my bottom line is that each year I ask over and over again with the vendors and say, how was your day? How was your day? Well, fine. We really had a good time. We didn't sell a whole lot. But what we really like about this is we get to know each other and we have a good time.
All right. Paula, thank you very much for calling in from the Jane Street Block Association. Jonathan Bowles from the Center for an Urban Future. What do you think about what you're hearing so far?
Well, I think everybody that's spoken has had some great ideas. I think Suketu is right. We got to get in more of the diversity of this city. And I think, you know, this is a city, as Suketu was saying, that is incredibly diverse. It's interesting. It's got amazing neighborhoods. And it's got more diverse entrepreneurs and artists than any place in this country, at least. And they're not reflective in these street fairs. And so, you know, this is a New Yorkers right now, I think, are craving authenticity. There's a sea of chain stores out there. They are flocking to green markets, the Union Square Holiday Market. They're flocking to places that are unique, like Chelsea Market. The street fair should be more unique and representative of what's interesting in this city. And so I think we need to have kind of innovative approaches, like Paula was suggesting. Not every street fair needs to have food, but they need to be innovative and interesting.
By the way, Stacey, Mayor Bloomberg said last month that he wants to find ways to limit street fairs in the future. Yep. And the New York Post found that police overtime for the fairs cost the city $4 million, and only $1.5 million was made in fees. So even if improvements were made to the fairs themselves, making them more diverse, whatever, would that prevent it from being a loss to the city, or do we care about that?
Of course we care, and I'm not certain that it would prevent it from being a loss. I think the issue, though, is it's a loss, and there's also complaints that regarding the banality of the street fair overall. So if they were more interesting events and they brought more consumers to the fair, I think perhaps there would be kind of a net gain. It may not be in the fees, because the fees are fairly low, but there would be more consumption, more enjoyment of the fair. There would be more diversity, therefore they would, you know, the vendors would benefit, and kind of somewhere down the pipeline, the city would benefit. But I think to invest in security when the street fairs, which is kind of, you know, a fixed cost, but the street fair isn't utilized in the way that we, you know, hope when we're planning them, that I think is what becomes problematic. And the fact that we are complaining about them as the consumers, yeah, and residents.
Here is somebody else trying to do it differently. Charles in Brooklyn. Charles, you're chairman of the Third Avenue Festival?
That's right, Brian. We've been running out here very successfully for 38 years. And clearly, your guest hasn't paid too much attention to us, because we have about 50 to 60 restaurants, local restaurants, which take part. We have another 40 or so not-for-profits, Bay Ridge Community Council, Guild for Exceptional Children, all kinds of local people in this festival, which draws over 100,000 people. It'll be held again this year on October the 3rd. We benefit the not-for-profits. You've probably heard of the Ragamuffin Parade, 47 years old. It's going to be held the day before this. Last year, we had our first green festival. We incorporated green themes.
Charles, I got to leave it there because we're running out of time, but a good shout-out for the Third Avenue Festival at the beginning of October. Suketu, just give us one more thought here about something that you wrote for the report. A music festival in Paris where city noise ordinances are actually suspended and musicians can play anywhere without a permit. Now, our city often talks about more restrictions for street fairs. Are you advocating a more lax system in our last 30 seconds?
Well, I think, for example, with a music festival, there could be one day or one night where New Yorkers agree to stay up till midnight to hear a glad sound from all corners. And the idea really is that it's about more than street fairs. It's about knowing our neighbors. It's about getting out into the streets and celebrating what we have. And the Fête de la Musique in Paris does exactly this for Paris. So I see no reason why we can't do the same for New York.
Suketu Mehta, New York-based journalist, author of Maximum City, Bombay Lost and Found, Stacey Sutton, assistant professor of urban planning at Columbia, and Jonathan Bowles, director of the Center for an Urban Future, which did this study on street fairs. I guess, Jonathan, people can see this on your website, right?
That's right.
Center for an Urban Future.
NYCFuture.org.
And contribute your ideas. And everyone, thanks for your calls. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.